As Detective Jarrett was about to wrap up his shift, the last thing he needed today was another unexpected crime scene added to his already overloaded stack of work cases. When the call for Car 76 crackled over his radio, he was half expecting Becky from dispatch to be wishing him another happy birthday. With a large cake in her arms, that was the first thing the young gal greeted him with earlier that morning. Being new to the force, Becky had no idea that this day was nothing to be celebrated. The only plans JJ had today was getting off, grabbing the largest bottle of whiskey the liquor store had on his way home, and drowning his sorrows while trying to forget that this day also marked the one-year anniversary of his missing wife. The last time she was seen was while shopping off at their bank's ATM before going shopping for his birthday gift last year, and then nothing. She literally vanished into thin air. Her, the Suburban, Becky's personal belongings, such as her cell, purse, $2,000 and a few clothes, somehow walked off of the earth's face and was never seen again. Hello, welcome back to The Guild, the podcast of the Writers, Artists, and Readers Guild. I'm your host, Chris Mary Holtzman, and this podcast is given to you, as always, free of charge. You can find it anywhere, Spotify, Breaker, Anchor, and Apple Podcasts, everywhere you find your podcast. Please, go in, give a thumbs up, like it. Share it, even if you're not the author, if you're the friend of the author who we're interviewing today, please share this so we get more and more listeners in. Welcome to the show. Today we're talking to author E.A. Green, and I would like to, he's a writer by trade, and I would like to implore you to go out and check out, buy his book, Real Skin, or any of the books he has out there, going on Breaking Rules Publishing's homepage and look him up there. And then leave a review. That always helps. If you like the book, leave a review. If you don't like the book, don't say anything. You know, it helps us authors out very much. This episode is brought to you by Easing the Reader, a podcast reread of The Wheel of Time. Go check it out. It's a bi-weekly podcast, so go out and check it out. You can find it anywhere you find your podcast. Just look for Easing the Reader and you'll find it. I think that is enough of promotions. There's a lot of news in my life, my writer's life. My book, The Face of Fear, has just recently been released from Breaking Rules Publishing as well. Go check that out on the Breaking Rules Publishing website and all of those things. All those links to E.A. Green's books, to my book, to Easing the Reader, all of that you'll find on our in the show notes. So, I've talked your ear off enough. Let's check out E.A. Green. So, at this time, I would like to welcome author E.A. Green to the Guild podcast. Good day, Mr. Green. How are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you guys doing over there with all this weird weather?
Well, actually, it's warm here. I mean, it's not. It's weird because it's usually not this warm here. So I'm doing good. It's nice and hot outside. So I'm actually quite happy.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So there's so many names. I mean, we actually briefly spoke to each other yesterday on the Breaking Rules Author Salon, which I guess we maybe want to promote it here so that we do our part every Friday coming to the Breaking Rules
Author Salon and check out what the Breaking Rules authors are talking about. You mentioned that you use EA Green, but even Green Man. How did that all come about?
Well, EA is my name, Edward Allen, or Eddie, for close friends call me. So, like, you know, a lot of authors, I thought, okay, I'm going to go by EA Green. And then after all that was set up and out there in the world, I realized there's another EA Green, who's an author. He's written himself a book also. And so at that point, I kept hearing this little whisper in my head that kept saying, you need to add the Green Man. You need to add the Green Man. And I just thought that really sounds like a great idea. I don't know why I'm not doing it, and I should be. So I decided, let's just add the Green Man to it. And it kind of seems to be fitting because of the type of books I write and everything that, yeah, I could see someone called the Green Man writing these things. So I just took it and ran with it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So would you say that the Green Man is more of your, is that your, would be your brand? Because, I mean, you don't use it as your author name, right?
Yes, that is correct. I do actually, I've already got a little brand logo. It's called the Green Man. And so everything that, anything I do, whether it's my pictures, I do write poetry and throw little tidbits out there. And so everything that I do, I actually associate under the logo of the Green Man.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and it's interesting, the Green Man in British culture, I mean, is a wood sprite or a fairy of some kind close to, if I remember my folklore class correctly, the Green Man is sort of like almost like a British version of Pan. Is that something? Does that sound correct? Familiar?
It is actually. I have a bed bug series, a kid series called Don't Let the Bed Bugs Bite. And that's when my alter ego really comes out. And it's filled with pictures of Green Men taken from statues, trees, different sculptures. So he is actually my alter ego. And I find it kind of funny because I love the earth. I love digging my hands in it. I'm a plant fanatic. I spent over 15 years in the lawn industry, moved to Colorado so I could be closer to forest and rivers and just all that. So, yeah, he's not just my alter ego. He's kind of like, it feels like he's a part of my soul. So I just couldn't deny that anymore. And I thought, let's just be known as the Green Man, too. That works.
Yeah, very interesting. So, and you mentioned that it works well with the type of stories that you write. Are you mainly, is that the kids' books that you talk about mainly, or what kind of author would you categorize yourself as?
That's a kind of a tough one because I decided I'm not going to just write in one genre. Mm. I've realized that I'm doing myself an injustice. And so I just write my stories, and then at that point, I find their genres. So, and that's been wonderful, because I started out thinking, I'm going to go with horror. Mm. And then next thing I know, thriller came out, and next thing I know, I had an idea for a sci-fi. I never expected a children's series to be part of my life. And it was so unexpected. I'm glad that I listened and I went with it because they're great books. So, yeah, I go from children's series. My latest that I just wrote is an actual crime detective novel, which I never planned to ever go that direction. And so I've got a little bit in almost every genre out there. And my latest that I'm currently working on is going to be dealing with romance. Okay. Which, that was, as far as we are from Pluto to any idea I had about writing anything along that lines. And I'm really excited because that one's going to seriously challenge me.
Mm. So how long have you been writing?
The first time I ever tried it was back in high school, and I our high school did a poetry contest, and I was a senior at the time, and I was lucky enough to win that. So that's all the way back in 1987. Woo, telling my age now. I tried again my hand at it in 1992, and I was one of the top 500 picked for the International Poet Society, and I got to go to Dallas and compete for that one. Didn't win. Wish I had, would have, but glad I didn't. And then I've just dabbled at it. I had one story I've carried for close to 30 years. And even then, it wasn't my first book published. It was my first started. So I've been at it a while, but I didn't start taking it serious until about 2012, mm-hmm. when I injured my hip and realized that just because of some arthritis and health issues, I'll never do physical labor again. And that's when I realized I no longer have an excuse. It's time to write. I'm sitting around. I'm not doing much. So I took it serious then. And my first one was published in 2019 through Breaking Rules Publishing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you've been with Breaking Rules quite a while then. Well, quite a while. But I mean, actually longer probably than most people I've spoken to who seem to have been published like less than a year. But what I was kind of thinking is that if you started out as a poet and going into, and I've spoken to others, Chella Corrington, for instance, who is a poet, but also writes fiction. And we didn't talk about this, but in the end, is it a difficult transition to make writing poetry, which is very, very strict in its rules, but also not only that, there is, you have a finite space to tell a really deep or broad story, as opposed to a novel where you basically, there are no limits or there are no rules. Did you find that transition difficult to make?
Well, I want to say no, because what's really weird is, yeah, poetry, you want to keep it tight and simple or to the point. But I have a hard time writing short stories, which you're supposed to keep simple, tight, and to the point. Mm-hmm. I find it easier to write my novels than my short stories. And so, yeah, I would want to say it was difficult, but my poems, that was the difficult part for me, was they were always too long. I had to learn to shrink them down, get to the point, you know, because you don't want to lose the people so early.
No.
And I think that's what's helped me with my books, is I had to learn to make my point to catch that reader and poetry quick. And I'm that way with reading myself. If I'm not into your book within, I hate to say this, and no offense people, but within 10 pages to maybe the first chapter, if you haven't caught me by then, 9 times out of 10, I just put the book down and I never try it again.
Yeah, I know that can offend some people. But I think as a literary scholar, which I am in my, which was what I went to school for, the actual idea, and most writers will tell you this, that there isn't time to be wasted in forcing yourself to read something that does not speak to you. And I tell my students that all the time, is like, if it doesn't speak to you within the first chapter, if it hasn't caught you, if you're reading a full-length novel, then put it aside, because it's not a book that is for you. It's not for you. It might be a great book for somebody else. It might speak to somebody else on so many levels, but you're not there yet. And maybe in 10 years, when you've read a lot of other things, then maybe it is. And it's the same it's really the same with a short story. If the short story doesn't capture you within the first like 10 sentences, then it's not a short story for you. And I think a lot of people get offended by that, but that is the truth of it.
Yeah, that's, I feel as if it's like you're droning on, and at that point, well, you're giving me too much. It's too much of an overload because if it takes 10 pages to talk about the same thing, then at that point, I've already forgotten everything else before that because I'm trying to hope I don't miss something in those 10 pages where it just kind of went on and on and on. And I've always, I think you're doing yourself an injustice at that point because I think the greatest part about a writer is it's not the fact that you might have written an engaging story, it's the fact that you didn't overload your reader with too much information about something that really didn't matter. And so, yeah, you've got to learn to control that because I know that we all want to make sure we get the story out there, and I don't want to miss anything. But if it really doesn't relate to the story at that point, you're actually taking away from the story. You're not doing it any value, is how I kind of feel about it.
No, it's the same. I mean, I liken it sometimes, and I try to explain that. Now I didn't have any problem with Breaking Bad because Breaking Bad I thought was a good TV show. I liked it from the start. But then there are people that don't get into Breaking Bad. I mean, people recommend it, say watch Breaking Bad, and then it's like I did, but I didn't really care for the first episodes. I didn't care for the first season. It was like, but it doesn't get good until the second season is usually the argument. But to me, that doesn't work. Why isn't it good from the first season? I mean, because it's not guaranteed that the show's going to get a second season. You can't say that. You can't. That's not a credible argument. Nothing can be entertain. It doesn't get entertaining until the second season. That's not what a second season is. You're not supposed to wait for the around for that. It's supposed to be entertaining right away. Am I wrong?
No, you're correct. Yeah. When I watch different things, different TV shows or dramas, that well, let's just say like Game of Thrones. By the end of the first season, there was no way you could get me to walk away and not come back to see what happened second season. It was just had me caught up in it right off the bat. And then there are other things I've watched, and you're right. If I'm three, let's say shows in, four shows in, and this just seems to be going on and on, and I have no clue what it's about. More than likely, I'm just going to shut it off and find something else. And I'm that same way with a book. If I have no clue what you're trying to get me to understand that's causing the story to occur, then at that point, it's just like, well, I'm sorry, but I can't read it. Two legend books that are classics that I still to this day have a hard time reading is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and The Tale of Two Cities by Dickens. Because it's just, I know they're classics, I know they've been around for a while, but to me, I'm like bored out of my mind as I'm trying to read these things. And I just can't stand that when that happens, especially with a book, because you're fixing to invest a whole lot into this story that you yourself have now have to try and imagine in your head of what the author is saying and writing. And if you can't grasp that imagination to catch you, then you really need to go back and kind of look at your work again, because like I said, you don't want to do yourself an injustice, especially in this business. A lot of people don't realize when you become a writer, you've actually entered the arena. You are a gladiator, and there's fixing to be a lot of blood, sweat, and tears spilt, because it is you are now competing against not hundreds, not thousands. We're looking at millions of other people out there doing the same thing you are. And if you can't stand out, then your body's going to be drug out, and nobody's going to even remember who you are in the first place.
Well, I mean, that's something that actually has been plaguing my mind the last couple of weeks. And saying, I'm not going to say you're old enough to remember, but I'm thinking you might remember this.
Quite possibly.
And not really because of your age, basically just because, you're just, of things, you've been around. And I was thinking, and we were talking about this on the Breaking Rules Author Salon, the amount of of writers that are out there, the amount of books that are out there. And it seems like it's just more and more publishing houses are opening up, publishing houses are closing too for various reasons. And it's just a flood, and I'm sure it'll kind of level out, it'll flatten after a while, because I remember, well, I'm not saying I remember, but I read a lot of like old science fiction and old fantasy and stuff like that, and it just seems to be so much out there of like the stuff that was put out in the 60s, 70s, and 80s of science fiction. It seems like anybody could get a science fiction or a fantasy book published. And from publishing houses that I don't think even exist anymore. Do you think that was something that happened? It was just easier sometime in the 60s and 70s to publish these books, and it just oversaturated the market. It died out in the 90s, and now it's kind of coming back. And then we'll see that curve flatten again. Do you think my thought has legs there?
Well, I'm not really sure it was easier, because like right now I type it, my computer fixes it, tries to find the mistakes, and I click and send an electric version out and I'm done. And yeah, it might be the competition's greater, but back then you only had so many publishing houses. You had to type it manually. You had to, if you made a mistake, there you go again. You can't just hit backspace and erase. And at that point, you had to mail it in. If you wanted it back, you had to send in money for them to send it back for return. It took 6 months to a year to maybe hear something back. I mean, I don't know how Stephen King did it, and I give him props, because just to try and pull that off back in the 70s and 80s, and the money that would have been personally spent to achieve this was probably phenomenal. Mm. You know, today, like I send it, I just, like I said, you click, we send it in, and if we're lucky, we'll hear something back from one of these indie places, usually within, I say, a month. But the traditional guys, it's still like winning the golden ticket at Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
You don't know if you're ever going to win it. You hope you win it. The possibility is, no, we're not getting our foot in that door. A lot of them, you have to have an agent. They just won't even listen to you or take you serious. So I think today we might have it easier in the sense we don't have to work our butts off to achieve it. But it's not easier today, because we're not dealing with tens of thousands. We're dealing with millions now of other people with the same idea, the same desire. And it's an uphill battle. Even back then, it was an uphill battle. But I think the price was greater to climb that mountain than it is today.
Do you propose that we're not going to see a Stephen King-level author again?
You know, I don't know. I was hoping, you know, I kind of felt like I would love to be the new Stephen King. But then I realized, wow, that man's got over 100 books. He's been at this a long time. And so I finally accepted, you know what, I don't want to be the new Stephen King. I just want to be the new author out there that everybody's talking about. Mm. Because I want to build my own self. I don't want to kind of fall on the backs of other authors. Because at that point, you're not really coming up with what your ideas need to be fresh. A lot of them are like, well, I like this author, so I'm going to write like that. Well, you're not being true to yourself, I don't think. You've got to be your own writer. You've got to have your own ideas. You have to be able to go into your own mind and explain these things to bring them to life. So I don't know if we'll ever see another Stephen King. You know, that's like saying, will we ever see another group, the Queen?
Yeah.
They were one of a kind. He's one of a kind. So I don't know. I just know that nowadays, a lot of people who want to go down this path do not realize that it's not an easy path.
No.
You are not going to send a book out and tomorrow they're going to give you money and you're going to be famous. It's just, I can't even tell you what the odds of that happening are.
No, and I think, but I mean, I think we have to be honest. Stephen King came in a time where that type of horror wasn't really written. The way he did
Agreed.
it, he took it to kind of like new levels. Very bizarre in some ways. And I think he was lucky that his first books became movies, because when movies like Carrie when Car Carrie came out, there was nothing really like that.
Oh,
That was
yeah, no,
unique.
not at all.
That was unique. So he was he I think he it was a big boon for him that the market wasn't oversaturated by Stephen King type horror as it is today. He was for I mean because and you, I mean you look there isn't that much room for the type of horror that Stephen King writes. I mean otherwise pe more people would be talking about Dean Koontz, more people would be talking about John Saul,
Yes.
and they don't, because there's really only room for one main guy. I think, and it's the same. I mean, you could say, like you said, never gonna see another Queen. There have been bands that sounded like Queen a lot, but just didn't get the same attention because we already had Queen. We didn't need a copy.
Yeah, I see that a lot. Like J.K. Rowling, there'll never be another writer that wrote for Harry Potter. That will stand out on its own till its dying day. But then right after that, here's the market flooded with Harry Potter type books and themes, all banking on what she had, the foundation she laid. And yeah, I get it that, yeah, I need to make some money. These are popular. Let's write. But basically, to me, you're just stealing her ideas and putting a different name on it. So, not to dish those that do, because to them, you know, it's a story on its own. I get it. But I don't want to be that kind of writer, though. I want to be the writer that stands out on my own. I don't want to piggyback off anybody, because, like I said, to me, I'm doing myself an injustice. I'll never find the true writer inside of me if I do that. And so I know that's when the market gets oversaturated. Like today, I've thought about writing wizards books, but in my head, all I see is the fact that, you know, well, I've got to be so different and so unique from her and the Harry Potter series. That's going to be difficult to pull off. You are literally going to have to create an entire different scenario, different world. Characters that don't seem to come off as if you moved Hermione from here to there. So, I think that's difficult today for the writers because, like you said, it is so saturated with so many different types of stories that a lot of them are kind of the same, going along the same. So, you literally, if you don't stand out in this arena, there's a good chance that nobody will ever remember you.
Well, I think we're going to have a different opinion there on the J.K. Rowling, as I find that J.K. Rowling stole a lot of her material from other fantasy authors, and that her idea is not at all original, taking stories from Diane Wynne Jones, for instance, who also wrote about a school of sorcery, but was less famous. And I think that she just happened to be at the right pla in the right place at the right time and had a big machine behind her. So I'll have to that'll have to be for you. I'm not a big J.K. Rowling or Harry Potter fan, actually.
Oh no, that's fine. No argument there. I guess the reason I don't know too many about these other authors is growing up, I could actually say my genre was Piers Anthony, Stephen King. And I really wasn't too far out into the fantasy realm like that. The closest I probably came was Terry Brooks and the Elfstone of Shannara, the Shannara series. But when it came more into the wizard worlds and like that, I really honestly have no clue what kind of foundations were out there before she came along.
But Pierce Anthony is a, I mean, I was talking about him yesterday. I actually had a long discussion about Pierce Anthony with author Tim Mendes. And also that we find that he doesn't have his rightful place in the pantheon of science fiction and fantasy authors, unfortunately, because I mean, he's a great writer, very tongue in cheek. And I would probably say that there's quite a few elements in Pierce Anthony's stories that J.K. Rowling definitely would have been inspired by. The whole like secondary world where, I mean, because in Pierce Anthony's, there's our world is very much present, and that's where you go if you don't have any magic, for instance. Because in Pierce Anthony's stories, everybody's born with magic. But that's a different podcast, I think. You were talking about your first book, 2019, was published with Breaking Rules.
Yes.
Had you sent it in anywhere else, or was Breaking Rules like your first attempt?
Oh, no. I sent Year of the Cicada out to probably almost 20 different publishing companies. At that point, I was staying away from indie companies. And it got continually rejected every time. I even had one guy basically rip me up one side and down the other and tell me just how bad the book was. And I did that. I tried, well, from 2013 till 2019. I sent it out to all these other places, and I tried to be the good writer and wait 3 to 6 months for I hear back from them before you send it out again. And by doing that, I finally realized I'm not going to get anywhere quick. This ain't happening anymore, because I can't spend my whole life waiting for it. Yes, from a lot of the traditional places, because, you know, like at my revelation is that's, like I said, winning the golden ticket. There's a good chance you will never see that. And so that's when I finally realized I need to give indie companies a chance, because you just never know.
And because I've heard a little bit varying, I would say probably a little bit of varying advice from different people. And actually, from the beginning, I pretty much believe this. If your story was rejected, don't send it anywhere else. Send something else. Don't keep sending the same story into various publishers. And I think that idea is mostly held by people who are published by a large publisher. Maybe because their books were always rejected from large publishers until they actually got one that was accepted. Did you what was your feedback for Year of the Cicada, and did you change it, or did you believe in your story so much? I mean, and I'm thinking this is just advice for other people that are, you know, dealing with rejection for their stories. Did you take feedback? Did you get feedback, first of all? Did you take it and then kind of rewrite? Or did you say, you know, fuck them, my story is good the way it is, and if they can't accept it, then they can't stand behind me. I mean, I can't accept. I'm not going to send it back revised.
At first, I'm trying to think of what I want to say. most of them at first, it was no. That was it. That's the only feedback and answer I got. The one that did write me, and he's the one that basically ripped me a new one, I thought, it can't be that bad. It just can't, because I think the storyline is great. It's something I don't think that's ever been written before, and so I believed in the story. And after he did that, life got a little complicated, so I didn't get to deal with my book for about a year after that one. And so after about a year, I had it printed out, and I decided to read it to a friend, because I'm trying to get an opinion here. I need an opinion. And realized that, wow, it was so out of whack, even I couldn't read it. And I'm like, holy crap. And I thought I really edited this book. And as I'm reading it to myself, I'm like, this, okay, this is kind of making no sense. I've got stuff that might start over here, then we'll get a whole new paragraph with something else, then I'll finish the thought past the paragraph. And I'm like, no wonder the guy ripped me a new one. He couldn't read the book. I can't read the book. And it took me, wow, at least 3 months to re-edit and revise and go through that book to where it was starting to make sense. And I got lucky. At first, I started reading it out loud to myself and realizing, okay, that's making things stand out. Well, I have Microsoft Word. Mm-hmm. And part of that program is it will actually read it out loud back to you. So yeah. I can kick back and let somebody else read my book out loud to me. And just that option has probably saved me so many mistakes, hearing the program read it out loud back to me, that we don't realize, because we can, you've seen those little things on Facebook with just a bunch of jumbled words, but it's actually, you could read it if your mind works that way.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's what I didn't realize is we are so used to reading that we don't always catch. I added an S or left off an S at the end, or I made it singular instead of plural. Our mind just reads it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we don't catch these things. And so I guess if I recommend highly to anybody writing, if you can find a program that reads it back to you where you can just sit and listen, your mistakes you're going to find probably, you might have thought you were 100% fixed, and you might find another 80% of that might have a small mistake here, that's not catchable, let's say, to the author, because we've spent already so much time reading this, we're going to miss things. But I'm telling you what, your customer or fan out there not going to miss it. They're going to catch it. Because after my book went out, I had a few family and friends. Well, you kind of forgot to make it plural. And in my head I did, but in the book I scanned past it. So, yeah, anything you can do to increase your chances of less mistakes, I highly recommend it. Because you never know what's waiting for you once that book's in print.
No. Definitely, I can definitely understand that. So you, I mean, so then you didn't actually do a professional edit with your first book. You didn't have beta readers or anything like that. That was foreign.
No, I asked for beta readers, and I'm telling you, it's like pulling teeth. I still ask for beta readers, and I might send out thousands and thousands to all these different writing sites on Facebook, and I might get one, maybe. And I would love to have a professional editor, but that takes money.
Yeah.
And I'm on disability, so I don't have money. So at this point, I have to take this really serious, and I have to focus because I'm my own editor. And that's kind of my OCD, is I hate when I miss something. So my favorite, I think I'm eventually I'm going to make a great editor. But I still make my mistakes. But like I said, if you have a program that reads it back to you, that is going to make your editing so much better, because you're just going to catch simple little things that could cause another person. Those simple little things will lose you a reader. They might like your story, but if it's written to where they have to fix it in their head as they're reading it, a lot of people won't even go there.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, that is so true. And I think I've been lucky. Now, most of the times I've had beta readers who've read through short stories. So that's like the strength. And I mean, you do get quite a lot of good feedback for those. And I mean, I'm very cautious with beta reading other people's stuff, especially if it's a full length story, because I don't have the time to read through a full length novel all the time in probably the amount of time that is needed, because people may, I'm done, I've edited it, I needed beta read, within a month because I'm eager to send it out before this deadline.
Yeah, I tried my latest release is Real Skin, and for I'm gonna say about 2 months, I tried to get beta readers. Please read this before I send it in. I need to have an idea if it's as good as I think it is. I got one in that 2 month time. And then that one, after I sent it to her, she showed me where she was about the 5th chapter in. And that was it. Never heard from her again. Mm. So it's I don't understand why it's so hard to get beta readers. At least I'm having a hard time. And I wouldn't think I would, because between all my social media and all the different writers I follow and that follow me, I must have close to 6,000 to 7,000 people on all my combined social media that follow me and that will receive my post. How many see it, I don't know, but I tend to post a lot, so, because I get in trouble for it with some of these sites. But still, I'm having a difficult time.
Yeah,
I'm just kind of dumbfounded on that one.
No, I think it is difficult, and I mean, most of us are part of reader groups and such things, and there's always if there's a million writers out there trying to push millions of stories, then there are going to be millions of writers out there pushing millions of beta reads. So it's a tough spot. I'd like to move on to your latest book, Real Skin, from Breaking. Now, am I correct in assuming that all of your books have been published through Breaking Rules?
Yes. Christopher opened the door for my first one, Year of the Cicada. And so far, I'm happy with everything that's been going on. So I just thought, you know, it's really going to do him an injustice if I start sending my books out to other places, because, you know, the man gave me a chance. He opened the door. Things are going well. I like being with him. So I'm at this point thinking that I want to help him grow his business. And so until something happens that I don't really agree with, which I don't see happening anyway, I plan to just stay with him.
So it hasn't been a deal of, like, that he's kind of like a handshake deal, saying like, whatever, you know, throw in anything you have my way, you know, as a first choice? Or is it, so it's just been your personal preference that you always send your books to him first?
Yes. Like I said, I've tried 20 other places, and when he opened the door and let me, he published my first book, by the way he handled everything, you know, I thought, this is good. And so it's my preference currently that he gets first stab at all my books. If he ever denies one and he's not interested, and I think it's still a good story, then I'll probably reach out to other places. But as of right now, he's enjoyed everything I've written. I've made him a sci-fi fan. He wasn't a science fiction person. And he read my second book, Father May I, and it's set in the future, and it deals with artificial intelligence, and except this time, it's not out to just instantly kill us. It wants to actually help us, or at least we think it does. We'll leave it there. But he read that book, and from that day on, he's basically told me I've made him a sci-fi fan. And so, at this point, yeah, as long as he continues to enjoy my books, that I'll and is interested in publishing, then I just plan to stay with him for now.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Because that, I mean, I think that if you find a home that you enjoy, you know, a place that you enjoy, I think there's something to be said for staying in such a spot. Definitely. But if we go back to your latest work of fiction, Real Skin, how did that all come about? And what is it about?
It came about, I was watching a news broadcast, and down in South Texas, some firemen went to a storage unit company, and one of the storage units was on fire.
Okay.
And my mind thought, well, that would be interesting for them to find. That would be so unexpected, it would shock them. And that's where the idea of like, okay, I like that. And as I thought about what they would find, I realized, well, it's going to have to involve a serial killer.
Of course.
And you need a detective to chase the serial killer. And so that's how the story kind of began. And then it morphed into the fact that the serial killer, unbeknownst, or as what they find is skin samples.
Okay.
He's got thousands of skin sample slides up on like those little light boards you see where they put x-ray machines, where you can see what you got on an x-ray. And so he's got this whole interior of the storage unit filled with these light boxes, and each of them have a little skin sample slide.
Okay.
And that's where it goes as you finally realize you have this is a serial killer and this is his trophies. Well, as the book progresses, the reader's going to realize that that's just the skin he kept, that part. But he doesn't keep the skins. He does something else with the skins. And so they're going to have to follow this detective as he figures out, okay, we know he kills people, we know he keeps trophies, but come to find out he's also... He owns a deli in town.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the reader goes on, they're going to find out what else he does with these bodies and the rest of the skin. And also, where the term real skin comes in is, as throughout the book, you're going to continually hear ads for an Android company. And they have sex dolls, and the sex dolls have what they consider real skin.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And so as you're reading the book, you're going to continually hear these advertisements. And down the road, you'll figure it out what's really going on.
Okay. Well, it sounds intriguing, definitely.
Yeah, it's a different take. It was my first crime book. I'll leave it out on the air, but if those that don't hear this broadcast... there's going to be two more books after this, but the way it ends is they have no idea.
Okay.
So I'm leaving a little surprise about this detective. You have no idea whether he's dead or alive. So unless they're listening, most readers are going to have no clue that there's going to be follow-ups.
So, and where do you get the inspiration for a story? I mean, your stories in general. Now, you were talking a little bit about, you know, where real skin came from, but in general, and what does your writing process actually look like for a story like this, which I imagine would take a lot of research.
I did do some research because I needed to learn a little bit more about detectives and about the area. It takes place in Arapahoe County here. A suburb of Denver, Colorado. And so I did some research there so I can finally understand kind of what they drive. Just kind of how they handle things. The good thing about stories that I consider made up, you don't have to do too much research, unless if you're going future-wise, because most of the technology we have today will still possibly be around, depending on how far ahead you go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like my research, I have to do research because I'm going into the past for my latest book that I'm working on, Delta Dawn. And yeah, at that point, no technology that we have today existed back then. And so that's where you must research. And so I'm seriously doing that. But my writing process, I'm actually kind of lucky. I'm going to consider myself one of the rare ones. 9 times out of 10, when I come up with a story idea, I instantly have a pretty much good clue how I want to start it. And I usually have a good clue how I want to end it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I know that's so rare for a lot of people. Now, I'm willing to let it morph. It, whatever morphing it needs to do as we're writing, I can go with change easily. So it doesn't bother me if all of a sudden a different thought or something of this character's having pops up. That will, you know what, that sounds good. Let's just kind of go with the flow and see where it takes us. So I try not to restrict myself there. And just, you got to let the story breathe. I'm also, I've learned that talking with a lot of people, I also do something that's quite rare. I have cheat notes.
Okay.
A lot of the writers, they're trying to remember dates, times, seasons, places. And at first I started off that way. But after you lose 30 minutes reading your book, trying to find something to make sure it's accurate, you're going to take forever to write your book. And so I made my little cheat notes, and I keep everything right next to me of who's related to who, if their dates or times or seasons are important. All that's written down. That way I don't ever have to go back into my book to confirm something. I can just look right over, and there's my answer.
Yeah, and that's interesting. Because it was one thing that I was considering. I was reading about your books, and obviously I came upon Real Skin, where the blurb is very different because there's like capitalizations in the middle, you know. Is that how it is in the book? Is that the kind of like the language in the book that way?
Yes. I want you to, as a reader, if that characters getting upset and raising their voice, I'll add capital letters to it to get you to understand they're upset and they're raising their voice. If they're really ticked off, I'll capitalize the whole thing as you're reading what they're feeling and understanding. So I'm trying to incorporate those emotions also of when they're speaking louder, when they're upset, if there's something of importance that they're stressing to somebody they're talking to, I'll capitalize that too. Because I want you to understand it's not just an ordinary word at this point. There's meaning behind it. And I know that's really, I'm kind of rare, I guess, and kind of one of a kind that does that. Because I've had my readers tell me, at first it bothered them. But as they keep reading on, they realize it has significance. There's a reason behind it. Because, yeah, most books these days, the only really first word that's capitalized is the start of the sentence or maybe somebody's name or a city. And so, but I want my readers to feel those emotions. So I do, I use capitalizations inside the book.
No, that's interesting because, I mean, that's a good thing to know and probably something a lot of people picking up your book might want to know ahead of time that this is kind of like the style of it. I mean, there's so many different things that you can do, and I've mentioned it before on this show, but one of my favorite authors, Jeff Noon, his book, Needle in the Groove, is written like liner notes in a CD or any kind of music, if it to be an LP or whatever, and instead of a full stop at the end of a sentence, he just has a forward slash. So it's all just made up of a bunch of all these forward slashes all around. I mean, in the text, which can be very confusing, but after a while you understand, oh, this is instead of a period. And it just gives his book a very cool kind of rhythm because the book is about music and drugs. And that, you know, it's a sci-fi where the music is pumped into the drugs. So when you inject the drugs, you become part of the music, or the music becomes part of your bloodstream, the beat. And I think that's what he was trying to mimic. And that's very, I mean, I always get fascinated by new ways of telling a story.
That is fascinating because it would make you feel like you're just trying to flow. Yeah. You're not like start, stop, paragraphs, end of sentence. So yeah, if his book is about, I could see that. I actually could see him trying to write it to where it has kind of like just a nice flowing from one point to the other. Because A lot of us, well, I don't want to say a lot of us, but a number of us have, you know, we've had our drug days where we've experimented. I have myself. And I get that because, like, across the universe, when they have the drug scene in there where they all take acid.
Yeah.
And I understand it. A lot of other people won't get it, and they can't seem to flow and groove with it, you know, but I'm over here like, wow, I remember those days.
No, that, I mean, it is, it is cool, to attempt those kind of things. I think it's real, a lot of fun. So what is next on the horizon for the Green Man?
Right now I'm working on my fourth bed bug book, which a lot of, to me, these books are like for those parents, who have children that could easily pass as a Wednesday or Pugsley Adams. These mm-hmm. books are creepy, they're crawly, they're a great way to introduce your children, I'm going to say between 6 and probably 8, to reading that kind of involves the first step in horror, because each one comes with a short story also. Mm-hmm. So, after I finish Bed Bugs 4, I'm currently working on it, and I'm working on Delta Dawn. And I'm old school. The first time I heard it was Tanya Tucker. A lot of people know it because during one of our Breaking Rules author salon meetings, half the youngins in there had never heard of it, which really gives my age, I guess. But I love that song. I've always, that song grabbed me from day one when I was a kid. And so right now I'm in the process of telling her story, of what happened to her. Cause we know it's a love story gone wrong. Cause she meets the wrong guy. And, I guess according to the story, she's 41. For the sound of it, she's still single and all alone and waiting for that bad romance to return.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to doing some research, and I found at Brownsville, a town called Brownsville on the Mississippi River, because her name reminds, since her name's Delta Dawn, it reminds me of the Delta. And at that point, the town actually has a rough history. And I figured, okay, I'd like what happened in the town, not to say it was bad. I don't like it because it happened, but I like the idea. And I was able to mix what happens with the town with the ending of the song of what happens with Delta.
Mm.
And so we've now gone back. It's going to be the late 1800s, early 1900s in her life. And we're going to find out what happened to actually Delta Dawn that turns her to this lonely woman that we hear in the story.
Yeah, cool. It kind of reminds me of, there's something called answer songs. Have you heard of them?
No.
It's a type of song that songwriters will write. Say you, let's say, Roxanne by the Police.
Okay.
You're a child of the 80s, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So, obviously, the singer or the main character is telling Roxanne that she doesn't need to put on her dress, you know, to go out and do whatever it is she does, if she's a prostitute or a dancer or whatever it is she is. So the answer song is the story from Roxanne's perspective, the answer to what he's saying.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of reminds me of that. And there are several musicians or songwriters that have written answer songs.
Like Reba McEntire Fancy.
I guess or I'm not a. The only Reba McEntire song I know is the duet she did with Brooks and Dunn.
Okay.
So that's all I know of Reba McEntire. I know who she is, but.
Yeah, it's a sad story of a mom that basically sells her daughter off during the Depression. And because she's trying to save the baby, and then the daughter comes back home and you find out about her life and the sadness of it and what happened. So I get what you're trying to say. So yeah, Delta Dawn would be along that. Yes.
Mm.
So that's kind of cool. I like that. You know, you always want to hear the rest of the story,
if nothing else. Well, Ed, EA, Green Man, our time is coming to an end. And it's been lovely talking to you. And I'm sure that we'll see each other in the Author Salon on other occasions as well. If people want to connect with you, they want to follow you on social media and stuff like that. Now, you said you had quite a big social media following, but if people would like to add to it and help you beta read, maybe, how do they get a hold of you?
They can actually reach out to me on Facebook. I've got an author page, EA Green. I've also got a second one on there called Books by the Green Man. I'm on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram. You can find me on LinkedIn. The All Author site, which if writers out there don't know about, they need to go check it out because it'll give you a chance to put your book covers out there. They have contests. And so that'll help people recognize you. They can actually Google also author EA Green or author EA Green / the Green Man. I've got a ton of stuff that pops up when it's Googled. And at that point, if they Google that, everything about me, my pictures, my books, my sites, all pop up. Tons of them for them to choose from.
Very cool. Anything you would like to plug before we go off the air?
The main thing I'd like to plug is for you people to check out my latest, my crime novel, Real Skin. It's quite unique. It's different. It's a different take on a type of serial killer. I think they'll enjoy it. It's set in Colorado, and Aurora is the town, Arapahoe County. I like to add different towns to my books to bring them more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So, if they wish to read that one, they can read Father May I. It's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The Flesh Eaters takes place in Colorado Springs. And so I try and bring today's world into a lot of my writings. So I think they'll truly enjoy whichever one they pick.
Cool. And on that note, I would like to thank you for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. And I hope you had a good time.
I did. I truly enjoyed myself. Thank you so much, Christopher.
Thank you.
It's been an honor.
Well, welcome back from that interview. Very good. EA Gray, you could probably talk forever about his work and ideas and stuff like that. So, very cool guy. As I said before, go and check out all his books on Breaking Rules Publishing. And that's it for the show today. We'll be returning next week on Friday, so check that out. Promo always drops on Monday for who Friday's guests is. If you want to check that out, if you want to know, follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all there. All those links also in the show notes. I'd like to thank you for coming in, listening. I would like to thank EA Green for being a sport and being on the show. And I'd like to thank John Holtman for providing the music. So, my name is Chris Mary Holtman, and have a great weekend.